You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
A pretty fancy bear hunt in Germany, a new IoT botnet surfaces, cryptojackers exploit a salt bug, bribing an insider as a way to get personal data, the UK's NCSC and the US CISA issue a joint warning about campaigns directed against institutions working on a response to COVID-19. Britain's contact tracing app starts its trial, Ben Yellen on AI inventions and their pending patents potential. Matt Glenn from Illumio is our guest, and he wonders if companies should break up with their firewalls. And don't get puppy scammed. You're looking for wags in all the wrong places. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, May 5th, 2020. Reuters reports that German authorities have issued a warrant for the arrest of Dimitri Baden, a GRU operator wanted in connection with a 2015 hack of the Bundestag. The Süddeutsche Zeitung calls the warrant a bear hunt because, of course, the authorities think Mr. Baden is working for Fancy Bear. He's a person of interest elsewhere, too. There are a number of people in the U.S. Justice Department who'd like to hear from him about the 2016 hack of the Democratic National Committee. Researchers at Intezer have identified a new Linux-based botnet they're calling Kaiji. It's apparently the work of a developer in China, and it's designed to infect IoT devices in order to herd them into a botnet adapted to distributed denial-of-service attacks. ZDNet reports that Kaiji gains access to targeted devices via SSH brute force attacks. Pentest partners say they've demonstrated a disturbing proof of concept, a crying wolf attack against Commercial Aviation's Traffic Alert and Collision Avoidance System, TCAS. It's possible to induce ghost contacts in the system, and some aircraft might automatically respond to such false reports by altering course. The potential risk to flight safety is obvious. ThreatPost points out that the ghosts won't show up on radar, and that pilots may well trust, probably will trust, radar more than TCAS, but the proof of concept remains troubling nonetheless. Crypto miners continue to exploit vulnerabilities in the SALT remote task and configuration framework. Computer Weekly writes that Zen Orchestra users have been affected, as have users of the Ghost blogging platform. The Register reports that DigiCert has also been affected. The UK's National Cybersecurity Centre, NCSC, and the US Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, this morning released a joint advisory warning that APT groups are targeting both healthcare and essential services. While such attacks could either be state-sponsored or the work of criminal gangs, and while both kinds of threat actors have been active during the pandemic emergency, APT, Advanced Persistent Threat, has come to be functionally equivalent to state-sponsored threat actor. The advisory summarizes the goals of the campaigns as follows. Quote, APT actors are actively targeting organizations involved in both national and international COVID-19 responses. These organizations include healthcare bodies, pharmaceutical companies, academia, medical research organizations, and local governments. APT actors frequently target organizations in order to collect bulk personal information, intellectual property, and intelligence that aligns with national priorities. The pandemic has likely raised additional interest for APT actors to gather information related to COVID-19. For example, actors may seek to obtain intelligence on national and international healthcare policy or acquire sensitive data on COVID-19-related research. End quote. The threat actors are actively scanning for specific vulnerabilities in their target systems, specifically Citrix vulnerability CVE-2019-19781, and vulnerabilities in virtual private networks products from PulseSecure, Fortinet, and Palo Alto Networks. They're also engaged in large-scale password spraying attacks. The UK has been particularly concerned to block these threats, which have been particularly active against the country's biomedical research sector. The Wall Street Journal calls NCSC's response a pivot and reports that measures are being taken to protect institutions engaged in vaccine research. The venerable firewall is a tried-and-true component of cybersecurity, tirelessly keeping watch over your network, keeping the bad stuff out. But some say there's a tendency toward over-reliance on firewalls, and a closer look is in order. Matt Glenn is Vice President of Product Management at data center and cloud computing security company Illumio.
If you think about the original firewall, it was basically the perimeter of an enterprise versus the internet. It was sort of the thing that was making sure that the internet couldn't get inside of your enterprise. So it was you were either on the good side of the firewall or the adversarial side of the firewall. And it is a great perimeter device. The challenge has been, and I think that most of your listeners will sort of, see this, is that the threats are no longer popping through from the outside in. There's a lot of internal things that happen, right? So the first thing that a bad actor will try to do is infiltrate. How do they try to infiltrate? Malware. So instead of it coming in, someone trying to, pierce the firewall, what they're doing is they're relying on somebody clicking on a bad link, downloading something bad onto their devices. And then, suddenly that threat is now behind the firewall. And so what did organizations begin to do? They began to put more and more firewalls inside of their enterprises. And that is just, that creates a lot of complexity to manage all those different firewall rules. And now you're creating more and more perimeters inside of our enterprise, which, from a security strategy perspective is a good idea, right? And I think, when Wi-Fi came in, the access of the network was, literally piercing outside of the four walls of a building. So, mm-hmm. We see people putting more and more firewalls like in front of their data centers, right? And now, I think the new sort of threat landscape is, we have our perimeter firewall. Our users, are going to get impacted at some point. I have some customers where they actually have people working for organized crime that come into an organization as a developer. So the assumption is that you've already been breached. That's sort of the new mindset of CISOs. So how do you basically ensure that the breach that has already taken place, and you have to assume breach, that it can't spread? And the answer to doing that is segmentation. So the first thing that a CISO will do is to say, oh, let's buy more firewalls to do that. Well, the problem is that driving more and more firewalls into your data center is costly and disruptive in that you may have to re-architect your data center to insert them. And I think that's why things are starting to break down in the report that we put out, the state of security segmentation sort of speaks to that point.
What is the transition like? If someone wants to adopt what you're proposing here, How is that that turnover period? What is that like for them?
Here is the good news about it. There is no change to the underlying infrastructure to do it. There's no sort of modification of the network. In fact, at a lot of customers, the question is, who owns this? Most frequently, we do see that network teams own the segmentation problem because, you know, segmentation is classically a networking problem, okay? The good news is you don't have to modify the network in any way, shape, or form. What organizations do, and what I always tell customers to do, is start by concentrating on the people and process. And what do I mean by that? Work out the process for how you're going to do the brownfield segmentation. Target, like, you know, 9, 10 applications and build that up. It's not very hard to do once you sort of target those people and process to go into your brownfield and, you know, take care of segmentation, but without breaking any applications.
That's Matt Glenn from Illumio. The UK today began to pilot its contact tracing app on the Isle of Wight. Matt Hancock, Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, gave the islanders a bucking up. The Telegraph quotes him as saying, "We'll learn a lot, we'll use it to make things better, and we want to hear from you. Where the Isle of Wight goes, Britain goes," end quote. The British system is something of an outlier among the more recent approaches to contact tracing, in that it represents a centralized approach to collection and analysis of data. The Telegraph has a description of how the app is intended to work. It's an opt-in system that uses Bluetooth for sensing proximity, and that depends upon self-reporting of positive diagnoses. A skeptical piece in the Register outlines some of the challenges confronting the NHSX-developed app, and a second Register article reports that NHS has informed Parliament that it intends to retain the data it collects even after the pandemic passes. The centralized collection and analysis and the plans to continue to use data for research has led to calls for close legislative oversight of the system, Computer Weekly says. The inadvertent exposure of a contact tracing database in India has aroused suspicion of such efforts' security and privacy, SC Magazine observes. The Washington Post has an overview of how such suspicions are currently being manifested around the world. In the U.S., while there are other projects under development, the joint Apple-Google exposure notification app has attracted the most interest. It's decentralized, opt-in, and will not use location tracking, Reuters reports. And finally, not all human-animal interaction during the pandemic has come in wet markets. There's been a striking rise in the rate of animal adoptions as people look for companions during a time of isolation, with Wired having gone so far as to say that animal shelters are empty. That's clearly an exaggeration, at least if taken generally and literally, but it does seem that pet adoption is up significantly. Since demand equals opportunity for criminals, there's also been a spike in what Naked Security calls puppy scams. These are like romance scams, only using cute pictures of dogs as the catfish. You send your money in for an adoption, and that money's gone with nary a puppy in sight. So, animal adoption has become popular fish bait during the pandemic, maybe even overtaking colloidal silver as a cure for what ails you. If you're looking for an animal to adopt, there are reputable local shelters who can put you in touch with a pet needing a home. There are still dogs and cats out there who could use a home, and animal, vegetable, or mineral. Don't be fooled by cute pictures that turn up in your email. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring.
you need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He is from the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security, and he is also my co-host over on the Caveat podcast. Ben, great to have you back.
Good to be with you, Dave.
You have an interesting story to share this week. This comes from Motherboard on the Vice website, and it has to do with artificial intelligence and some stuff from the patent office. What's going on here?
So last year, there were two patents pending in front of the United States Patent and Trademark Office, one for a shape-shifting food container and another for an emergency flashlight. The interesting thing about these inventions is that they were not invented by a human being. They were invented by Daybus, an artificial intelligence system. Now, the system was created by a researcher, a guy named Stephen Thaler. But the issue in front of the patent court was whether you could grant a copyright or patent interest in something created by a non-human, created by artificial intelligence. And the Patent and Trademark Office said that inventions, that only human beings can be inventors. Artificial intelligences cannot be inventors. Only natural persons have the right to obtain a patent. So until this decision came out, the law around this was pretty vague. Patent law referred to individuals as the entities that could be inventors. Of course, the question was whether individuals just meant natural persons or artificial intelligence. I mean, Daybus, the artificial intelligence system, according to, you know, some definitions, might be considered an individual. And so finally, the Patent and Trademark Office has provided some clarity here. What other researchers have said is they really should allow artificial intelligence to be able to be granted patents and trademarks, because it's sort of analogous to a senior advisor who has, you know, mentored a PhD student into coming up with an invention. That patent should belong to the student, the person who's learned from the inventor and not from the inventor, him or herself. And I think what the court is saying here is you can't make that analogy. The PhD student is a living, breathing human being, unlike the robot artificial intelligence in this case. So sadly, our robot friends, and if you actually...
We put off our robot overlords for a little while longer. They're not able to get patents.
Yes, we've bided just a little bit of time. It's so funny that on the front page of this article, there's a picture of various robot toys, and they just look so sad that their patents have not been granted. But alas, only human beings can be granted these patent and trademark interests.
You know, this a couple of things this reminds me of. One of them they bring up in the article here, and the first is there was the case with the monkey taking a selfie of itself and some folks trying to say that the monkey had copyright to the selfie. And ultimately, the Copyright Office said that no, only humans can be copyrighted.
What I love about that is PETA went to bat for the monkey, which I guess is very on brand for PETA.
Yeah. Right.
It's not just trying to get us to stop eating meat. It's let's grant intellectual property rights to monkeys.
Right.
You know, good for them.
But the other thing that this makes me think of, which is not quite so lighthearted, I suppose, is that I remember when the laws about gay marriage were making the rounds, and there was lots of discussion about that. You know, some folks on the right would say, well, if two men can get married, two women can get married, why can't I marry a goat? Right? Why can't we just, why can't it? And of course, the the response to that is, well, a goat is not a human being. A goat is not, can't have, there's no contract law that applies. Marriage is a contract, and you can't have a contract between a human and a goat.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously a half serious argument to illustrate something, but this reminds me of that also, in that, humans have rights and machines and animals do not.
I don't want to get too deeply into existentialism here. I can't claim to be an expert, but there are some things that are unique about human beings. We are aware of our own existence. We have emotions. We have feelings. We have dreams and aspirations. And machines, by and large, do not have those things. Although the more advanced the machines get, as you say, they will eventually be our overlords. Maybe they'll start to develop some of those qualities. But yeah, I mean, there is a serious point in there that only humans can be human. Mm-hmm. And, I sort of think that might be underlying the rationale for this decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's all a simulation anyway, Ben.
We are really living in a simulation. Yeah, this is just one of many universes. And
right. We
happen to be in one of the worst ones right now, unfortunately.
Oh, there you go. Keep your chin up, Ben. Keep your chin up.
I will try. Yep.
All right, Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.